Good morning. Coming up on 7:40 here on the Mighty 690, as we continue throughout a Wednesday edition of the program, and since it is Wednesday, we got someone from K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District joining us. We have horticulture agent Jesse Gilmore. Good morning, Jesse.
Good morning. Glad it's finally starting to feel like fall a little bit.
It actually is, and of course, we didn't really benefit from all that moisture that South Central and Central Kansas received from the snow. I keep bringing it up. I'm like 14 inches in Marion. That's just kind of unusual for this time of year.
Yeah, that precipitation is going to be really important for their plants overall, especially if they've got a lot of evergreen plants to keep hydrated in the dry winter.
Oh yeah, not to mention of course winter wheat and all that good stuff. It really likes having a nice blanket of snow there. But hey, I know that we have, you know, the changing weather here, and I've seen folks, you know, these past several weeks trying to maybe do the shuffle with the houseplants in and out. But at this point, you know, those houseplants are, if they haven't been moved in, they're done for.
Yeah, they're probably toast. Most houseplants are going to be, if not tropical, subtropical, so they are going to need a much more sheltered condition to be in, that the cold is not going to accommodate, really. Although, we did get bumped up half a hardiness zone last week in the updated USDA hardiness zone map, so we are a little warmer in the winter than historically, or at least 11 years ago when the previous version of the hardiness zone map came out. So we're now zone 7A, which means we have an average minimum temperature in the winter of 5 to 10 degrees, somewhere between 5 and 10. What's important to know about that is just an average. So some years we will have a minimum temperature that is colder than that, and some years we will have a minimum temperature that is warmer than that.
So with that, does that actually mean that, you know, those little back of the seed packet maps, will those actually change at all, you know, for some of those planting recommendations?
Probably not right away, but typically when you have a recommendation on a seed packet or a plant that you're growing, it will have the number, not necessarily the map. But if it is hardy to zone 7A, that means that it should be able to survive our average winter. Now, if we get a colder winter, like I mentioned before, average means half of our winters are going to be colder, half of ours are going to be warmer. The plant might die off if it is listed just for zone 7A. So you might want to look at plants that have a hardiness zone or a hardiness zone and a half more cold tolerance than 7A. So going down to 5B, for example, and putting a 5B plant in, or maybe even a 6A at this point. But you can also kind of manipulate the hardiness zone potential of your plants by putting it in the right spot in your landscape, usually along a southern wall that gets a lot of reflected light and heat from the sun in the winter. That's a good way, or a pretty easy way too, to give the plants that might be a little more tender a little extra heat during the winter.
Gotcha. Well, I mean, the old Farmer's Almanac, we can trust that. It's saying that it's going to be cold and snowy this winter. What a shock.
Yeah, and the persimmon seeds that I've been talking with other foragers about are showing spoons. Totally non-scientific way of looking up what winter is going to be like. But according to the folk story, when they show spoons, you're going to be doing a lot of shoveling. So
okay.
Hopefully we do get a lot of snow.
We need that.
We need any kind of wintry precipitation at this point, because, you know, a lot of ponds dried out completely during the drought, and snow, you know, we don't think of it as water. I mean, at least like magic at this point, the winter ice and snow, but it is another type of water precipitation. And if we get enough snow melt, like you look at California, last winter, like early January, they were getting tons and tons of snow, and their plant life absolutely flourished after that snow finally melted. They were pulled out of the drought situation by that melting snowpack. So we could really benefit from a lot of snow this year. Will we get that? I can't say. I have no idea. Weather is notoriously difficult to predict in Kansas.
Well, and then the actual, you know, places with mountains, I mean, they could kind of bank up some snow and then it melts, you know, in the spring or whatever. So they kind of have that. We don't have that benefit.
Yeah, we don't, unfortunately. A lot more rolling hills that aren't nearly as tall and can't get that precipitation. But we will see. Hopefully, we have a cold and wet winter. So far, so good from what I'm hearing around the rest of the state. We just need that to come down our direction a little bit. But yes, houseplants, especially houseplants in containers, oftentimes people will put them outdoors during the warmer months. You see that a lot with really tropical plants and plants that like more heat, like citrus. I know some people who keep Meyer lemon trees. They are the most cold tolerant, so they probably could take light frosts. But if it gets down below like 28 degrees, then the trees and most other houseplants would be killed outright by that cold. So you would want to bring them in. And there are certain things to keep in mind when you have houseplants in your house that will help keep them alive for the most part. A lot of times, houseplants are going to need a temperature between a daytime temperature between 65 and 70 degrees, and a nighttime temperature between 60 and 65 degrees. So you wouldn't necessarily need to keep your house warmer than room temperature in order to keep most of these plants alive, but you can run into issues if you're keeping the plants too close to windows or heat vents. So with windows, they can be a little drafty, especially during the night, and if the plant is near or touching the window, that can cause some cold injury to the plant. Heat vents are kind of the opposite problem. You put plants around heat vents or fireplaces or stoves, they dry out really quickly. You're going to need to water them more frequently, and the plant will use more water overall. Not just what's in the pot. The pot will dry out more quickly, but water will also evaporate out of the plant at an increased rate. And that's true for any plant, because the number one most crucial factor for the health of your house plants is actually going to be humidity in your house. Most house plants are going to need around 50% humidity in order to have the sweet spot rate of metabolism and photosynthesis. I crash course on humidity. Humidity just describes the amount of moisture in the air. When air, a column of air or some other measurement, is 100% relative humidity, that means that the air is saturated with water and more water cannot evaporate out until that water disperses elsewhere. 50% humidity is not going to be achievable in the winter. Unfortunately, our air gets very dry, probably about 5% to 10% humidity during the winter, and even succulents that are adapted to desert environments need around 20% humidity in their environment. So you have a couple of options for making your area more humid. Obviously, the smaller the area that the plants are in, the easier it's going to be to give them the humidity they need. So if you're trying to humidify a huge space in your house, you're going to need to put a lot more water out there than is feasible, especially if you're trying to mist. A lot of people think misting plants is going to help them, and it does a little bit, but on larger room scales, you're going to need a humidifier in order to get the humidity that you need. So keeping them in a smaller room, having a humidifier, or picking plants that need lower amounts of humidity, like those succulents, is typically going to be the best way to minimize your management of houseplants for humidity.
Sure, and you know, yeah, especially if you have a particular room where you're going to be doing that, having that humidifier. And then, of course, some houses do actually have built-in, you know, humidifiers or the humidistat sort of thing, so at least bumping that up a little bit is going to help just overall. And that's not a bad thing for winter either, is to have a little more humidity in the air.
Yeah, so the idea behind humidity in plants in general is that the more humid the air is, the less water is going to evaporate out of the plant. So it's going to experience less water loss. Water as a molecule always wants to move from high concentration to low concentration. And when you have a really low humidity in the winter, the high concentration is always going to be in the leaf tissue, and the water will evaporate out through stomata, which are pores that have to open in order for the plant to go through photosynthesis. And then once the water is out of the plant, the optimal condition is that the air right around the leaf tissue stays humid. And by the water just staying around the leaf tissue in the air as humidity, it decreases the imbalance of that concentration, so it makes it harder for more water to flow out of the leaf. The problem with winter wind is it's very, very dry, and it's also pretty windy for most of the season. So it's carrying that humid air away from the leaf tissue and replacing it with dry air that basically just maintains the same imbalance of water concentration. So you get dehydration very quickly. That's actually one reason why you want to water your evergreens even in the winter, because historically, at least in the 3 years and change that I've been down here, we do not get a lot of winter precipitation, from what I've seen. I think I remember only one snow last year that actually had accumulation in Pittsburgh. So the plants, if they keep evergreens, they don't go dormant like deciduous plants do, like most plants do. They are continually going through photosynthesis. They are continually going through respiration. They need that water constantly. And without precipitation, they're going to desiccate. They're going to dehydrate their leaves in order to minimize their water loss, because without that water, they are going to be very stressed out. Most evergreens that deal with winter dehydration, they are probably going to pull through. I've had a lot of calls about hollies dropping their leaves in late winter, early spring, because they weren't getting the hydration that they needed, but they just pushed out new growth in the spring. It's definitely something you want to avoid if possible, because that water stress compounds with other stresses like insect infestations or potential disease issues or environmental tolerance as well. So watering evergreens is pretty important during the winter.
So going back to the houseplants, kind of from the houseplants perspective, if you will, once it's, if you know, maybe you have a plant that you leave outdoors for a lot of the time, a lot of the year, if you bring that inside, is to the plant, is it kind of going dormant, if you will, or is it, or if is its growing season kind of continuing?
Yeah, most plants during the winter, even if they don't go completely dormant because their environment has been controlled in a way, you know, just bringing them inside out of the cold, giving them a rather ideal spot in the house where they're getting the light that they need, they're still going to slow down their biological systems quite a bit. And so they don't need as much light as people think they need, and they really don't need as much water as people think they need inside your house. Overwatering is the number one way to kill a houseplant, and I see that all the time, usually in my own house. So the problem with water is that fungal problems, fungal diseases, fungal pathogens, they love water. They love water and they love humidity. The environment that you need to create in your house to have successful houseplants will also encourage fungal problems. And in houseplants, the one thing you have to watch out for more than anything else is root rot. If your roots on your houseplant rot, your plant is going to die. There is no way to come back from that. And so you want to make sure that you are giving the potting media that the houseplant is in, you want to make sure you're giving it enough time to dry out between waterings, so that the any fungal problems that might be in the potting media, they die off from lack of hydration. Your plants will survive a little bit of time in dry potting media. It's very important to make sure that you are using sterile potting media, typically that you buy from a hardware store or a garden center, not soil. Because if you bring soil in with your houseplants, you're likely bringing in microbes and pathogens as well. So when you buy potting media from the garden center or hardware store, it's going to be sterilized to prevent those microbes from getting into your plants and potentially causing disease or killing them outright. But rule of thumb, most plants like the potting media to be pretty much dry before getting rewatered. You don't want to leave houseplants in standing water, like in saucers. You would need to drain the saucers or the water collectors. Every pot should have some kind of drain hole for the water to go through. Now, there are exceptions to the watering. On one hand, you have ferns that need constantly moist soil, pretty much. On the other hand, you have succulents, which are adapted to more desert conditions. They need less frequent watering, but most plants are going to fall somewhere in the middle for that. Watering is the single best way to increase the health of, or adjusting your watering. Not necessarily more water, but making sure that you give the plants the right amount of water is the single best way to ensure the health of your houseplants throughout the winter.
Gotcha. Okay, well, Jesse, we're coming up here on the news, but we're going to continue our conversation with you here in just a moment as we talk with Jesse Gilmore, talking some houseplants as a topic as we go into the winter and everything like that. So, Jesse, for the folks listening right now, though, what is the best way to get a hold of you if they do have questions?
Calling any of our offices in the district. That would be Girard, Altamont, Independence, and Fredonia. My home office is in Girard. That's 620-724-8233. They can also email me at jr637@ksu.edu anytime they have questions.
Okay, well, we have more with Jesse Gilmore on the other side of the news. 28 degrees right now in Coffeyville as we approach 727, or 57, that is. .810 on the mighty 690. We continue our chat with Jesse Gilmore, K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. He's the horticulture agent for the district. And good to have you back on once again, Jesse. And we continue our talk on some houseplants, and we're even fielding a few questions here this morning.
Yeah, so in the first half, we talked about temperature, we talked about humidity, and we talked about watering. There's really two other things that you can do to help your houseplants along in the winter. The first is making sure that it gets enough light. Now, as I mentioned in the first half, the plants overall are going to be going mostly dormant, not completely dormant, so they will still need water, they will still need light. But light is not as important as most people think it is because of that slowed metabolism of the plant. Direct light is always most beneficial whenever you can get it. Unfortunately, your house is not always going to cooperate with that. So in the winter, the sun hangs more south in the sky because the earth is tilting away from the sun. So if you have a southern window in your house, that's going to be the best place to get direct light for your houseplants. Most plants are actually going to be okay with indirect light, so they don't need the light immediately shining down on them, but as long as the light makes its way in, that will be okay. You just want to make sure if you are putting your plants by the window that you catch them before potential drafts become an issue. A lot of houseplants that my mom has specifically, she puts on rolling
the cart
stands. Yeah. So she can just easily move them away from the windows when cold becomes an issue or if they're getting too much light. Too much light, not really a very common thing in houseplants at all. There are some houseplants, like poinsettias, that have specific needs in terms of light. So there's what's known as day-neutral plants, which is just the standard amount of light. Most plants are going to fall into that category. There's going to be long-day plants, which need large amounts of light and small amounts of darkness. And then there's going to be short-day plants, like poinsettias, which need small amounts of light and a lot of darkness. So usually short-day plants, like poinsettias, they're going to need more darkness than you can get naturally. So you'd need to put them in dark areas if you wanted them to flower again. So most short-day plants, you're going to buy them, and they're going to have the ornamental characteristic that you want. So, for example, poinsettias, they're going to have the color already in the leaves. A lot of people think that the colorful part of poinsettias is the flowers. It's not the flowers. It's a special type of leaf called a bract. The flowers are very, very unassuming. But in order to get that color again next year, because poinsettias you can keep over multiple years, assuming you are diligent with the watering and the fertilizing, it is not going to put that color back out until it gets the short light cycle that it needs and is exposed to a certain amount of darkness. So you will need to move it out of light range, typically in a basement or in a closet, for a certain amount of time. Usually 12 to 14 hours a day of darkness, which is pretty hard to achieve naturally, in order to get that color again. But like I said, most plants are going to be day neutral. They are okay with the ebbs and flows of the sun. Some people will put grow lights on their houseplants. That can help. Pink color light is typically going to be the best for overall energy for the plant that it creates in photosynthesis. Typically, you're going to only get those in LEDs. Incandescent lights also work for photosynthesis. They're just going to get hot, and they're going to be a lot more expensive to run than LED grow lights would be. So that covers temperature, humidity, water, and light. The last thing you would need to think about is fertilizing your houseplants. They are not using a ton of nutrients, so you do not need to over-fertilize. When you buy a fertilizer for houseplants, you want to make sure that you are getting a slow-release fertilizer. And the way that slow-release fertilizer works, I am specifically thinking of something like Osmocote, which is what we used at K-State in the greenhouses. The fertilizer salts are liquid, and they are trapped in a little bubble, like a bead. And that bead is water soluble, so it will start to break down as it is watered when you are watering the houseplants. And it will release little bits of the liquid fertilizer inside at a time. And this is because, one, roots can get overwhelmed with too many salts and can become water stressed with salts. I'll explain a little bit about how that works in a second. But the other reason is that, and probably the more important reason for houseplant owners, is that potting media is not soil, like we mentioned previously. It does not have clay. So clay is the particle in soil that holds a lot of nutrients up where the roots can use it. It does that because of very specific chemistry-related stuff that I probably don't have time to get into, but clay, really bad for, like, drainage and the physical properties of soil, but really, really good for nutrient management. Because potting media does not have clay, all of the nutrients that you add, if you add them too quickly, are going to just drain right out with your next watering. So you need the nutrients to be released in a slow enough manner that the roots can actually use them efficiently. So that's where the slow-release fertilizer come in. It's going to be more expensive than like the powder or the granular fertilizer that you can find at the same stores, but overall your plants are going to like it a lot more.
So we're looking for something labeled like houseplant and slow release, right?
Yes, yeah, slow release. Typically it's going to be beads of liquid fertilizer that break down. That's Osmocote, that's other brand names as well. Salts, when we talk about salts in a chemistry perspective, it's just charged ions. It's not just sodium. Sodium as a food is salt. That's table salt. But when you have salts in a soil or in a potting media, it affects the concentration of water. Like we mentioned previously, the concentration of water inside and outside of the leaf tissue. Here it affects the overall concentration of water in the soil. And what I have seen in certain homeowner situations is there are so many salts in the soil, either through accidental over-fertilization or some type of contamination, that the movement of water actually flows backward out of the roots into the soil, because the overall concentration of water in the soil is so low compared to all of the chemicals in the soil that the water really wants to and is pulled out of, pulled out of the roots, which will look like drought stress even if you are watering as much as you can. We had that problem in a couple of lawns up in Wilson County 2 years ago, I think, and it did end up being a salt issue. So you don't want to over-fertilize plants out in the landscape, and you also don't want to over-fertilize your houseplants as well.
Gotcha. That's a great reminder on that for some of those basic things we definitely want to know. Now, we did have a few questions from some of the folks listening in the office, and one specifically about a fig tree indoors.
Yes. So I love fig trees. I think they are an incredibly underplanted food-producing plant. Figs will grow in our hardiness zone. They would grow in our hardiness zone when we had our previous hardiness zone. They will grow outdoors now. It does require a specific type of variety. Usually you want to aim more for cold tolerance. Chicago Hardy is one of the most common varieties that I've seen. However, fig trees can live for a very long time. One of the people who I went out and visited in Pittsburgh, her grandfather brought a fig tree with him to Ellis Island when he immigrated to the United States from Italy, and they basically brought this fig tree with them wherever they moved to. And so the fig tree is over 100 years old. It was on the south side of her house, so it had a little bit of that microclimate benefit to keeping it a little warmer. But that is a type of fig tree that probably does not have a specific variety name. Most fig trees are going to be managed the same way. But the question that we got was about a fig tree in a container. The fig had some leaves that were starting to turn brown. Typically, when you have that kind of situation, you're going to need to look at repotting. When you have a container, the plant is just going to want to keep growing and growing and growing up to the space of the container that it's in. If you let it keep going after that, the roots can start circling around the exterior of the pot and get bound up pretty quick. That is when you start seeing above ground symptoms or above potting media symptoms. You want to first think about how long it's been in that pot and potentially to repot it into a bigger container to give the roots more space to grow. When the fig tree was described to me, it was described as tall as a person, and the container was only about maybe 2 feet in diameter. At that point, you would really start suspecting that the pot is the issue and you would need to move it into a bigger container. It's probably not something that's going to hurt it immediately, but over the long term, the health of the plant can suffer. As far as containers go for houseplants, a lot of times I see plastic. Plastic works totally fine. Terracotta is one that is a lot heavier to move around, so it's trickier to plan for getting it into a different space, like moving it away from the window, unless it's on a rolling cart. Terracotta has the unfortunate side effect of wicking water out of the potting media, so your potting media is going to dry out more quickly, which, if you have the right plant, might be preferable, but for most plants, they're going to want that water there longer. Plastic and terracotta are really the only two that I see in any large quantity. There can be stone, but that's the heaviest and probably also the most expensive container that you can buy. So for your money's worth, it's either going to be plastic or terracotta 99% of the time.
Sure. Now, I had one more question for you, and that was, I've started these little cactus sprouts in the spring. They've germinated, and they haven't done really anything since then. They just kind of sit there. I don't know if they're not getting enough light or maybe not getting fertilized. I haven't fertilized them at all. So I don't know what the heck. They're still alive, but they're just not doing anything.
Yeah. I would probably... So cactus, except for Christmas cactus. Christmas cactus is horribly misnamed. It is a tropical plant. Most cacti are going to be found in desert environments where they have very high light intensity. And so if we can't get the plants that light intensity that it's used to in its native geographic range, it is not going to want to grow very much at all. That would be my best guess as to the reason why your plants aren't growing, because I doubt you are a neglectful parent when it comes to houseplants.
I make sure it's watered.
Yeah. Light would be my best guess for that. Kind of switching over to Christmas cactus for a second, because
timely.
That is another thematic houseplant around this time of year. Christmas cactus is tropical. It needs more moisture than most cactuses that you are going to find. Very, very nice looking blooms. When I was asked to give a class on houseplants, they were like, can you tell us the difference between a Christmas cactus, an Easter cactus, and a Thanksgiving cactus? And I don't have a ton of experience in houseplants, so I thought the person asking was making a joke. Like, oh yes, all these different holidays have their own cactuses. It's real. They're different species in the same genus. They all have slightly different management, but pretty much the same water, light, and temperature needs. So I got to learn a little bit about the difference between a Christmas cactus, an Easter cactus, and a Thanksgiving cactus, which really comes down to the leaf shape. Christmas cactuses are going to have pretty spiky edges to the leaves. I believe it's the Easter cactus that has hairs on the ends of the leaves, and Thanksgiving cactuses are going to have much rounder leaf edges.
Well, and I had heard stories of maybe someone buying a Christmas cactus that was flowering, you know, at Christmas time and blooming, and then the next year they just didn't really do, they had it in a normal house, they just stayed inside, and then the same thing would bloom at Easter, and then it kind of got on an Easter cycle where it was just blooming at Easter instead of Christmas.
Yeah, it's... At a glance, pretty hard to tell the difference between the three species. And they hybridize with each other pretty readily, so they could take on the characteristics of both species or some kind of middle ground if they are allowed to reproduce with a different species.
Because is the blooming controlled by the amount of light? Does that have anything to do with it?
Oh, I can't remember. And I just gave this class a couple weeks ago, so I should remember that question. I don't remember.
Sure, no worries.
But a lot of people ask questions. Enough people ask questions about why their Christmas cactus isn't blooming to where the University of Minnesota put out an article specifically about it.
Gotcha.
And it usually has to do with some kind of disturbance as the buds are starting to open, essentially. And if there's too much of a temperature change or too much of a humidity change during that sensitive period of flowering, the buds are just going to drop off. And you're not going to get the flowers that you probably bought your Christmas cactus for because those flowers are very cool looking.
And also, those Christmas cactuses are pretty easy to divide and start new ones off of.
Yep. You can actually just take cuttings off of them and put them in new potting media, and they will root readily. It's one of the easier plants to propagate as far as vegetative cuttings go. Kind of up there with African violets in terms of ease of propagation. Now, if you wanted to increase its odds of rooting, you could buy a rooting powder at Home Depot or Ace or a garden center. That rooting powder is just indole butyric acid, or IBA. It is a specific plant hormone that helps plants develop their roots faster and deeper. So the amount of hormones, typically when you take a cutting, you have to find a bud. Because the bud is going to have a lot of those plant hormones already, and it's going to make it more likely that your cutting is going to take and it's going to continue growing instead of die. For IBA, if you're taking the rooting powder, you don't necessarily need the bud. You would just need a stem or a petiole of the plant. And for the Christmas cactus, it's a little weird because the leaves are growing on top of each other in one long chain. So you would want to cut it off clean at one of the leaves and then potentially get a little bit of rooting powder and stick it in whatever potting media you want. But they are very easy to grow. My mom was showing off her Christmas cactus cuttings when I was up there for Thanksgiving in Kansas City.
Yeah, those are a lot of fun.
So Christmas cactus, I would definitely be able to answer questions about that if you called in about them.
Yeah.
But one final thing I did want to mention, because I think we're about out of time here, has to do with winterizing garden tools. If you have not already drained your hoses and blown out your irrigation systems, that is absolutely something that needs to be done sooner rather than later, because especially with irrigation systems, those repairs can be very costly. I have seen, and I was fortunately able to come by and catch the irrigation problem in Pittsburgh before it became a huge issue. This irrigation system had burst and was basically spewing water out of it into the street.
Oh.
I went up to the house and I said, "Hey, I'm off duty." Essentially, I was running back from the grocery store and I saw this problem. "I'm off duty, but I've worked in landscaping before, and I think your irrigation line has burst from frozen water inside it. So definitely get your irrigation system blown out. Sometimes landscape companies will do that. Sometimes you'll be able to do that on your own, depending on how big your irrigation system is, because an ounce of prevention is worth a pound of cure, especially in irrigation systems.
That is a great reminder.
But for hoses, all you need to do is drain the water out by elevating one end of the hose and then walking the length of the hose down to the other end. And, you know, water, it expands when it freezes. By getting as much water out of the hose as you can, the chances of it expanding to the point where it cracks or destroys your hose is a lot lower. And that's also true of irrigation systems.
Good deal. Well, Jesse, if people have any questions for you related to this or house plants or any other horticulture question, where can they get a hold of you?
The Girard office is the best place to get a hold of me, 620-724-8233. You can also reach me by email at jr637@ksu.edu.
All righty. Well, Jesse, thanks so much for stopping by today and always informative. Look forward to chatting again soon.
All right. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, that's Jesse Gilmore, K-State Research and Extension's Wildcat District. Coming up, we do have Open Line on the way, 32 degrees right now in Coffeyville.